Today, Louis, I'd love to talk about some of the projects that you've been involved with in Salmon Arm and the area just over the last 20 years or so, because when I first met you, it was through the art gallery, and that was back in about 2009, 2010, and you were already a going concern for lots of different cultural projects. So are you ready to dig into your memories?
I'll work at it.
So the first time that I remember meeting you was when there was a Switzmalf Cultural Center event at the gallery. And that's when I met your mom, actually, Elder Dr. Mary Thomas. It was really lovely to meet her. She was amazing. But yeah, I met you and you were kind of just this background guy, just doing the work and talking to folks. And then we knew you existed and therefore asked you to be part of SAGA, the Art of Storytelling, which is an exhibition we did in 2012. Do you remember that?
Yep, betcha. back when I was a young buck.
Oh, yeah. It was really good because we asked you to come and tell pre-contact history because we were studying different kinds of storytelling. That was one of our goals of that exhibition, was all these different ways of storytelling. And so the oral tradition was an important aspect of that. So for one of the events, we asked you to come and talk about pre-contact history. And we asked Dave Harper to come and talk about post-contact history. And together, you guys presented like this whole history of the Shuswap area.
Well, it was, I was just really getting back into the culture at that time. And it was, I don't even know how I did it. You know, it was because I just, memory, I guess that's all I talk about. And that's all I can do, you know, because, and it needs to be getting out, you know, because we don't know much of our history. You know, we do have it in the back of our minds all the time, but, you know, getting it out. And I think that's why I'm doing this show. It's kind of, what you call, retrospect, trying to tell my story.
Yeah.
And I think it's a healing process that I'm going through now. And, you know, according to our people, you know, you have to do some things to make yourself a better person. So I think that's why I'm doing the show, is to really let people know that I am still in the process of healing myself, you know, and for all the things I did in the past. And, you know, and it kind of hurts a little bit sometimes, you know, when I bring back the past, and it makes me sleep better anyway now.
Well, that's good to know, because I'm very appreciative of your openness and generosity with your history. I think it helps a lot of people understand ourselves, our community better.
Well, like I said with Dave Harper, you know, it kind of hit me pretty good, you know, because I never really understood some of the history of a town, but not as much because, you know, being locked up on the reserve, you know, it's a different thing. But to hear different stories of different families and different things that, you know, where I was aware of a little bit of it, but there was never really that much contact anymore after the first initial settlers when they first came in, you know, because they needed us to help work the lands and learn about the valley here.
And that was a big gap in Salmon Arm's post-contact history, that there's no Indigenous content. Like, you still exist, and your families and your community still existed, and yet the history of Salmon Arm didn't include that for about 100 years, and is just now kind of starting to wake up.
Yeah, it's slowly, because I guess because there's no contact with us, you know, and no communication, you know, and just when we needed something, or when the RCMP come to knock on your door.
Yeah. I'd love to, just kind of explore. So after the Art of Storytelling, SAGA, the Art of Storytelling in 2012, we went on to work on Trail Mix together. So that was a really exciting thing for me, because once I got to know you, I realized how amazing you were in terms of this bridge builder. And the Trail Mix idea was just perfect because you knew the land so well. So Trail Mix was an exhibition that paired up a photographer, an artist, and a trail guide to look at and explore 15 different trails in the Shuswap area. And you explored the trail on Mount Ida, Klaskant, and you worked with Linda Franklin and Bob Hoskins, right?
Yep. Yeah.
So how did you feel about getting involved with that?
Well, it was a fun thing to do because we had to go up on Klaskant, you know, and I thought Linda would never make it up that mountain. She's like a little goat. and she could almost keep up with me. Photographer at heck of a time, too. Well, I guess I was in fairly good shape then, you know, and I climbed a mountain like an old mountain goat. But it was an experience, you know. And I'm a believer of telling the story anyway, you know, to let people know about the mountain, because it's an iconic mountain. You know, a lot of people talk about it. And once we got up on top there and you look down at Salmon Arm, you know, it's such a view. And it was incredible because it's one way of telling the story of our people, us being the first ones here. Not quite the first ones here, because the animals were here long before we were. But it was a really... exciting time, you know, because this mountain's getting recognized, you know, and our people too. I think it was all about recognition of the Suwakmuk people, you know, and that's what the story was all about, or the pamphlet.
Mm-hmm. The little book that came out afterwards, Trail yeah. Mix. Yeah, yeah, your story in there was pretty great. It introduced us to the little people.
Yeah, well, a lot of people always ask me because, you know, that mountain, stories go back a long ways on the little people. To Tumekskwela, that's what they're called. It took me a long time to find that word, and that's the little people. Actually, I was up at Banff, meeting with the elders up there, and they took us to this cave, and they had a guy there talking about the little people too, so it's not only here. I guess it's like the Sasquatch, you know, and it's a little known because they aren't as big as the Sasquatch. That's why it's so.
But that's why Sasquatch isn't here, right?
Yeah.
That's well, what you told me, that the little people keep him away.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're like us native people, you know, we're territorial, and they keep everyone else away from their territory. That's what I figured anyway, because I've never heard of any real sightings around here. Closest one I know is Falkland. It's the closest one that was here, and I've never heard of. My grandmother said there was none sightings around here, so that's what I figured anyway. That they kept everybody else out of there, and a lot of people were, they have strange powers because you know it's. Something like any other mythology, I guess, you know, that they have certain powers. And I think it was the ski hill they started up there, you know, right away they came to me and they asked me about, they didn't really want it up there. So they figured me as a native that we could get all the whole tribe together and go up there and demonstrate and whatnot, you know, to become radicals. I told them no. I told them if the little people want them up there, they'll let them. So they started the ski hill up there, and kind of like on the city side. And it didn't last too long. I think it only lasted, 2 years? And so I said, see, the little people have wanted them up there, they'll let them. So a lot of stories, you know, about them. And the other one was the fire. You know, they were arguing about the logging up there. They want the loggers up there, they let them, the little people, to Tumekskwela. And next thing you know, the fire came along and burnt half the mountain.
Yeah, 1998.
Yeah, and that's when we started meeting on Klaskant. We started meeting with Tolko and Forestry. And when Tolko first came to our meeting and they had two lawyers there. And right away, we said, you want to negotiate in good faith, and yet you bring two lawyers? So that's the last we've seen of those lawyers. Hmm. And we met up there for 2-3 years just talking about cultural. We done a lot of cultural tours with Forestry and Tolko to get them to understand. I think that's where the revenue sharing and came in. You know, they started recognizing more of us people, you know, I don't like to call it rights, because I came across an article that said, you know, when settlers came here, they talked about rights, we have rights. But our people have obligations, you know, we have obligations to the land to look after it and to make sure everything is okay. But everybody's there now, they're talking about rights. We have a right to be here, which makes it kind of weird when you think about it that way. Anyway, so there's been a lot of issues going on with that mountain, you know, and I think that something good will come from it one day, you know, because too many people recognize that as an iconic mountain, and it belongs to Salmon Arm.
It is iconic. It's home, right? Yeah. It's a visual representation of home. It's amazing. What about Shuswap Trail Alliance? I know that you've worked on several projects with them, and I know that the West Bay Trail, this is a concept that you've had in your mind for about 50 years.
Yeah.
A trail that connects Switzmalf to Salmon Arm along the lakeshore.
Yeah. Well, I met this young guy a long time ago. I think it was even before, though, the trail. I wanted a safety trail connecting our reserve to the city. A lot of our people were dying on the tracks there. In fact, my dad died on there, and my son. You know, at the way back then, there was a lot of alcoholism. I see our people, too many of them, getting hit by a train. Cause we all came into what they call the jungles across the tracks there and drank over there, either get too drunk to walk the rails and get hit. So I wanted a safety trail, that trail coming into town, because it was the shortest route into town because through the highway it was too long. So our people came through the railway.
I want to point out that the railway was built on the old, what I've heard other Sohetmik people call the old Moccasin Trail. So that their trail did exist along the lakeshore, but the railway built their tracks on it.
I think our trails ran all over. And because remember, this was all swampland, so there was no town. You know, there was no reason for it all to come to trap, maybe. Because this was all claimed by our people, you know, a long time ago, was trapping in this area, you know, muskrat, beaver, mink, you know, and you name it, they done a lot of trapping here. It was until they put the railway in and the highway, it kind of diked it. And then people started building in here. And, well, anyways, that trail was a safety trail. And I came into town, I talked to them about it, and they said I should join the Savinus with old Eric Christmas. Yeah, he was one of the founders of the Savinus.
Salmon Arm Bay Nature Enhancement Society, right?
Yeah. So I joined them in talking about it, but it kind of went nowhere because their main focus was on their trail. And so I had no choice but to back out. And one day I met this young fellow and moved into our area here and introduced himself, and we became good friends.
What? You know,
Phil McIntyre, Paul. Yeah, that's when I met him, and we started talking about trails. There's always been a good relationship I had with him, you know, because I always tell him, you know, the Trail Alliance is like our people, you know, always out in the land. And I said, oh, they must be part Indian. Because that's what my grandmother said. I picked that up from her when she was, I think I talked about it before, when she was, her sons were up playing with the Finlanders up on the hill, and they had a sauna. And they had a sauna with them, and they told my grandmother, and said, oh, they must be part Indian. But I always keep that in my back of my mind, you know, when somebody acts like us, say, oh, you must be part Indian. So I feel that the Trail Alliance is part Indian, you know, because all the people are always out in the land, and we need people like that, keeping that connection to Mother Earth. So that's why I really connected with them. When we were talking to them, and I guess, I don't know who brought it up, but they formed the round table. They used the Salmon River round table as a model. Phil tries to give me credit, and I said, no, it was not me. Well, in a way, I was responsible, but I always shy away from big high, you know, in our language, it's called high stoot. Haishutu, you know, you start thinking too highly of yourself. But anyways, we ended up forming the Trail Roundtable. We're all, because it was the same as the Salmon River Roundtable, because all the governments were involved in it, all local governments, all the people were involved in it. So it eventually became a roundtable too. All the local people are involved in it. So, because I and Phil, when we first started, we started talking about hut to hut, building trails and building pit houses for rest people so people can camp overnight in it. Maybe it still might happen. One day it might.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a vision we had a long time ago, but it was a fun vision, and we still have fun together. And we remember we did a few projects with the art gallery.
That's right. You and Phil did a piece for the pollinators where you went out onto the land to look at some indigenous plants and trees and talk about their effect on, you know, the pollinators in the area. Yeah. And Phil said something so perfect in that audio piece. He said, "Louis, you are a pollinator."
Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a lot of fun together. Yeah. When we first went out there, what the hell are we out here for? I don't know anything about pollinator. We started laughing. But, you know, the more we got into the walk, you know, we started really talking about it, you know, and mm-hmm. you put your mind to something, you know, things will come up, you know. But I think it's just that thought of it was just that companionship that, you know, because on a trail when you're by yourself, you become too pensive. But if you're with somebody else, you can start pointing out different things along the trail. Remember I did that with that one young guy?
Yeah, that was another project you were involved with. So that was Lucas Glenn, who was in an exhibition at the gallery, and he did a project with you where it was about listening, like really hearing. And oh my gosh, he was very impacted by your visits together.
Yeah, because he told me, you know what, he thought people were thinking he was crazy because you go on trail, he started even lifting up leaves to see, really see what was in there. I told him, you know, people just treat trails for their own physical need. And I told him, a lot of people are never really aware of what's on the trail. Because, you know, we never stop to really look what is on the trail. You know, because if you look down, you'll see all different kinds of bugs. You'll see all different kinds of plants, you know, mushrooms, you name it. If you really look carefully, and they'll talk to you. Tell them, look at me, look at me. You know, and he said after he finished that project, he said he walking on the trail, he started lifting up little leaves to look what's underneath there, and he thought people would thought he was crazy. But you know what? He started understanding what it was all about, the trail, you know. You know, to be really more inquisitive. His Mother Nature gave all those things to us and to appreciate, you know. And I think this is that obligation we have. We don't have a right just to go do things as we should, because, you know, we have an obligation to treat everything with respect and teach other people the obligation that they have too. Because I bring it up time and time again, you know, you're in Suwakmakulu, respect the land.
We did an exhibition at the art gallery called Slahaya. That's the first time I'd gotten familiar with the word. So thank you very much for bringing that into my vocabulary. And we worked with a number of Indigenous artists and Métis artists to create artwork around a series of Chiptaquila, the legends. And those legends, a lot of them, well, we actually did some recordings. Kenton Thomas came in and we recorded a couple of them. But some of them were already recorded through a project with CBC.
Mm-hmm.
With Leah Shaw, right?
Yeah.
So how did that go?
Well, I was on council then, and Leah Shaw phoned me and told me about the project, you know, doing Chiptaquila or legends. So I started talking to her. And what she said was she approached the Okanagan band and they said, no, we're not going to do it because of Randy Bouchard, you know. If he takes the copyright off his book and give it back, apparently he'd done some interviews and made a book of it. So they weren't going to do anything. So I told him, well, I'll ask the family and ask around. And my mother said, yeah, it'll be a good idea. So that's how that project started with Leah Shaw and CBC Radio.
So they came, did they come to you and record stories, or did you go into a studio to record?
Yeah, she had a studio, and we done our recording up in her basement. It's surprising, though, you know, on that project, I didn't even know how to speak the language. We had to get some interpreters kind of to coach us on the language. And you know, now I'm speaking it, you know, just from memory. So at that time, I couldn't speak it because maybe I had nobody to talk to when I was growing up. All of a sudden, 10, 15 years ago, I started speaking the language again. I started putting two words together, and then two became three, three became four. Bien, yam, is kalotawa, bien, that's kalotawa, that's what magchin. That liam is kakawa. You know, I'm not quite good at speaking the language, but, you know, it's passable, I guess you could call it. But it's good because one time I was at a meeting and or at a, doing a welcome talk, and I that liam squat yam is kanima kakanima is sawapmuk. And what I said was, anybody understand Suwapmu? And nobody put up their hand. I said, good, I could say whatever I want now.
Just string some random words together.
Yeah.
In that project, you brought your kids in to voice some of the characters in the stories?
Yeah, it was. Kenton was in there. My girl Crystal was in there. My mother, of course, she was the main. Then we had to bring Chief Atom from Chase to help us with it. And that was there because they, just like my mother, they, her and Lawrence, Michelle were prolific speakers. So they were kind of our mentors when we did struggle our way through the language part, because the language is in English. The tapes are in English and in Suwapmuk. And it was quite an experience, you know, because I think that's when I kind of started thinking about our language then. Because I could understand it perfectly because my grandmother spoke it all the time. Like I said, you know, whenever a stranger came around, she wouldn't speak it anymore. She reverted to English. And anyways, I'll say I'm thankful to my grandmother for teaching me the language. And but that project is a start of recognition, I think, of some of our, well, it is a way of putting out to the public about Suwapmuk people too. And that's the reason, I think that's the reason why I do most things, is just to bring recognition to our people, you know, and the pride I have in my Suwapmuk my cultural heritage. I think it's part of who I am, and because I always talk about our Suwapmuk people. Like, that's like at the work at the art gallery we do, you know, is try to include other Suwapmuk people, you know, and get them and encourage them to come out and kind of tell their story. That's what it's all about.
So you've also done quite a lot of projects with this radio station, CKVS.
When I first got involved in it, we're thinking of airing my mother's tapes, you know, to bring out the lessons. And I still hear the odd people saying they heard my mother on the radio, you know. And it's another way of getting out our story. Then I did one for the project I did with them too. Was I did some chiptakula. I had a brainwave and you know, reaching out to the younger group. We done 12 chiptakula with for the radio station, and we shortened a version of them because kids' attention spans are only about not even 5 minutes. So I shortened them out. I rewrote the story, and I tried to get the kids on a reserve to participate. They didn't really want to. And so I told my two girls. So they were really the main characters in that chiptakula. We did one version, and that was the Salmon Irma West School. But it takes so long to be able to do it, because I think it took me about a month and a half. We had to get all the kids' permission to air over the radio. We done 12. My two girls were the one of the leading actors, or whatever you want to call it, on there. But it was fun to do. My girls were, what, only 10, 11?
Oh, that's perfect. And so they must listen to those now. And
not really. I told them, you know what, maybe you could be leaving a little legacy down the road, you know. Their grandchildren might go, hey, Grandma, I heard you on the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
You just never know.
Yeah.
You know, anything you do now, you know what, it's something down the road, you know, might come up. And it's like what I do, you know. So you got to leave some kind of a mark on the land. Leave your mark like the old bear. He leaves his little scat on the road, or he scratches the tree.
Yeah.
Anyways, I look at it like that.
You're also involved with the Switzmalt Daycare Society and the building of the construction and the creation of that amazing space.
Yeah, well, when they brought it up, actually, you know, it was a... I think what they gathered, the architect gathered from us, you know, we wanted built like a pit house. And but we always forget, you know, it's hard to, like my mother said, you know, it's hard to put a square into a circle. And creating office spaces and everything like that made it more difficult. Once we got it going, it was, we found out it was way more expensive. So we're having fun with the mortgage payments on it. And daycares don't make money. And so we're stuck now with a big, beautiful building and meeting the mortgage payments. I think we got another 25 years or something like that on our mortgage yet. But, I keep telling people, you know, it's a beginning of, you talk about truth and reconciliation now. And it's an integrated daycare. So the children are getting a chance to get to know each other. So I always say, you know, the only way you could have truth and reconciliation is getting to know each other.
But, and there's a lot of cultural aspects to the daycare space as well.
I go in there periodically and tell stories, and we have some people going in doing, some of the elders going in doing some basket work or other things, you know, and they have a little drumming and singing, and they got some language classes going, you know, just introductory. And so it's, like I said, really integrated, you know, and the kids all call me Uncle.
Yeah, here comes Uncle Louie.
Well, actually, I did that a lot of times when I was teaching at the schools. I told them it's a sign of respect when you call an elder person, especially a guy, you know, you call him Uncle. So I used to walk down the streets there, and some blonde kids would say, hey, Uncle, and everybody started looking at them and looking at me, trying to put that together. But it was, you know... you know, and I guess it makes me feel real good, you know. At least I got the message across. It's one of those things that, you know, that we have to look at, and how do we get along together.
You're planning on doing more work there. Like, you're planning on building a miniature village, and you've talked about building a little sweat lodge there.
Yeah, well... I've already built a smokehouse, a traditional smokehouse in their playground. So that came along. Well, it's an idea, too, that I was going to build one up at Haney House. And but we were talking about it at the daycare with their cultural teachers over there. And I said, why don't we build a traditional village over there? But I think going through the hoops and, you know, on liability and all of that, you know, we have the architectural work and so... I'm thinking we might get a better response if we go on a miniature one where it's small, you know, where kids can't really go in. But, it's telling the story of our people from a long time ago is important. Mm-hmm. And teaching them. And we're talking about leaving a lot of the traditional plants out there. So like the Saskatoon, Supilali, and highbush cranberry. Oh, no, there's no... There's pin cherries there. There's quite a few other harvest fruit and things that our people had. So I think that an important part of it, you know, the learning.
Yeah, learning what those plants look like and how to harvest them and then how to prepare them.
Actually, that's another little place, too, where spring beauties grow. I've never seen hardly anymore, but they pop up in that hillside there every once in a while. So there's a lot of other things that could be, you know, teachable to the kids to make them understand what Mother Nature has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And it's located on Nisqually Reserve, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a little bit west of town.
Yeah, First Avenue.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. Just even driving by, if you've never seen it, drive by. It's just a gorgeous place. And so the children's aspect, like, you're very dedicated to ensuring that, you know, our children, our children's children will have a better time of this, their experience here on the planet. So your work with the museum had actually focused a little bit on the Children's Museum recently, right?
Yeah.
Up at Haney Village.
Yeah, well, I was contacted by the museum up there. They wanted to build a kids' museum. So we got the meeting and talking about it. So that's when I got Lloyd Charlie to, I helped him build a dugout canoe, because their theme up there was, they pulled an old part of a, looked like an old steam and steamboat at the other side, part of one. So they have the dugout canoe and the steamboat facing each other, the two cultures meeting.
Hmm.
And I was working with Kyler Page, I believe, I think, and I and him worked together on that. So he's done a lot of museum work. He's been a curator, I think, for some time. So it was fun working with him. Still up there yet.
And then there was an exhibition about your mother that ran for about a year or so, a little while back.
Yeah.
And were you involved with that?
Not too much. I think my sister Bonnie was the one that took the lead on that one. And had some preliminary talks with the staff up there on it, you know, and I've been working with the museum up there for quite some time. In fact, they gave us a storage space up there if we wanted to talk them into it.
So do they have artifacts that are specific to this area that they have offered?
I've never really went into their archives. Maybe one day I will and see actually what they have in there. We got stuff all over the world, I think, from the Suwakmuk people. Because what they call repatriation now. And they're getting it, a lot of them are getting it back. I went into that one museum on the island on the coast. All their totem poles and everything was repatriated. And they made a nice, beautiful museum out of it. You know, their basket work and carvings, everything.
Yeah, and that's mainly because the Indian agents at the time confiscated cultural objects because of things that were illegal, like gatherings of any kind, potlatches, powwows, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sold those artifacts all over the world. They made their fortune off of selling the confiscated artifacts. So now, I mean, it is really positive that those things are being repatriated, but that was a horrible part of the history as well.
Yeah.
And getting to know your cultural objects again. Like, if, you know, there's several generations now that grew up without those things in their communities. And
well,
so
it's... Well, actually, they found a basket up the Salmon Valley, or one of the rivers anyway, and it really authenticated what everybody guessed, you know, because they made them cedar bark baskets to cook in. And they actually found one. So it kind of authenticated what my grandmother was talking about, you know, them cooking with hot rocks and cooking right out of a kind of like a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And so it authenticated that story.
So where was that found?
It was in one of the rivers. I can't remember. It was either in the Salmon River or I think that was a net maybe. But it was, I think, over in towards Kamloops.
Like in the water?
Yeah, in the mud.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still preserved. Okay. The cedar actually stays quite a long time, and that's what our people used on their pit houses.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't deteriorate as quick, so it lasts for a long time, because I had some old pit houses, and the ones that really looked like it was still there was the cedar bark.
Hmm.
So they last a long time.
Well, that's amazing. So where does that basket live now?
I think it might be in Kamloops. I'm not too sure. They got quite the archive now at the Kamloops Museum. Actually, I was over there just a little while ago. Kyler's actually working over there now. So he asked me to come over for half a day and talk about Swapmuk. Maybe I might have some ideas they might have picked off on me. So he did take one idea he might be doing with my kids' Chiptakula, because it might fit in perfectly, he said, with the little kids. Because they're only about 2-3 minutes long.
So actually, getting back to that, there were two CDs that were produced. I remember that. Where are those available now?
I think you have to go online now with the CBC Radio.
Oh, okay.
Once we finished them, I was at a dilemma because Leah was asking me, well, how about copyright? What do you want to do with it? And I was remembering a story about Randy Bouchard about putting that copyright in their name. And I said, well, to avoid future argument, I'm going to ask him to put it into the Suwakmuk people. Belong to the Suwakmuk people. So those six Chiptakula and CBC Radio are registered under Suwakmuk people. Only the Suwakmuk can lay claim to it.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of an interesting, that's a whole different sort of thing, right? Copyright who's got the ability to download that and show it or use it in any displays or anything, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's complicated. So that was interesting that you made it part of the whole Sahuatma communities.
It's our legend.
Yeah.
You know, it belongs to us, not just me or...
Yeah. And copyright is a colonial construct, right?
Like, yeah.
The idea of copyright. So, and the sharing is part of your culture.
Well, telling our story. And one good thing about being preserved over there is that anytime technology changes, it'll change with it.
Mm.
So it'll never be gone.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big problem with our culture was we had no written language. So it really made it difficult to preserve our heritage. I got all my tapes here at the radio station and I got it on computer at the office there. So that's going to be preserved too, because a lot of our old VHS tapes are all disappearing now and eroding. Same with the cassette tapes, they're all slowly eroding.
You can barely find anything that a CD or DVD can be played in anymore.
Yeah.
Like everything's on a thumb drive or just online.
Well, they got all excited here for a while because they found one old cassette tape that I had, my mother must have had, and it was one of the recordings from James Tate.
Oh.
I guess because it was on an old reel-to-reel, then they must have taped it onto a cassette.
Hmm.
And they were trying to clean it up, but they couldn't do it.
Aww.
Yeah, so somebody was trying to do it here at the radio station. Somebody got all excited for a while. And,
yeah.
Well, it would be something.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, if you can understand what they're saying.
Okay, so now let's switch gears out of the arts and into sports, which I want to say, sports and arts are basically all part of our culture, so it's not really separate. I shouldn't say it's separate. But you have a very interesting story about sports history here. Because the Switzmalt folks had their own hockey team once upon a time.
Yeah, the Glen Eden Eagles. It was started way back in the 50s. And nobody thought much of it after it disappeared. You know, like everything else, you know, cyclical seemed like it. You know, and but sports has always been something I like doing. I like even listening to my Knuck Uloch and Squai. I found out that's a Blue Jay. Squai. Blue Jays are playing. And but sports has always been. And like I said, I think before, we done a lot of skating in the wintertime, you know, because there was a lot of ice all over. The rivers were icy, the creeks were icy, you name it, the lake. You can skate right across the lake, right to Sunnybrae. Because we done a lot of that, me and my brother. We'd skate over towards Sunnybrae because his grandmother had some fishing lines out there. And we'd skate out there and check the lines for her, for the ling cod.
Oh.
Yeah, and so that was a winter delicacy for our people. Then a lot of skating, and The men in the right around the mid-50s, they wanted to clear a piece of ice. So Joe Williams had some property down there, and he had a nice big pond down there. And they started clearing it out and playing shinny hockey or whatever they call, you know, just play each other. And then they kept playing in that pond, and they kept playing there. And somebody had to keep it clean all the time, so it was up to us younger people. We go down there, and it was a beautiful time for us. You know, we'd build a big lean-to there. We confiscated a couple of bales of hay for bedding, and bring down some old quilts, and we'd skate there probably right from Friday, and we'd get out of school. We'd skate right from there, right till Friday afternoon, right till Sunday evening, the whole weekend down there. Then we'd keep the ice clean, we'd flood it and keep it clean for the guys to come down whenever they played. And they started getting themselves a team together just from that little pond hockey. They started getting the team together, and they started playing exhibition games. I remember them playing in Grinrod, and I remember them playing in Chase. Then when they built the arena, they asked if they could join the men's hockey there, commercial league. They called themselves the Glen Eden Eagles, and they started playing hockey there at the old arena, the Memorial Arena.
Mm-hmm.
Brings back a lot of memories, and now they're going to tear it down, I see.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's like us old Indians there, you know, sooner or later, got to get rid of us. But anyways, they started playing at the commercial league. Then after a few years, they decided, why don't we try a native hockey tournament? And they got the city to agree with it, and they started a native hockey tournament. A few teams started coming in, Vernon, I think, Merritt, I think. And anyways, there were just a few teams started coming and slowly started catching on. It came fairly big. Pretty soon they had, I think they had one or two teams from Alberta coming in, and they had Prince George, they had, oh, you name it, Kamloops, Penticton, Vernon, Merritt, Kulshana. So there was came a pretty big tournament. I looked into it, and in fact, when I went to Victoria with Greg Kylo, I got their historian to look into it, and as far as she could gather, it's just one of the first hockey tournaments in Canada.
Yeah, they were all Indigenous teams.
Yeah, it was the first one I know in BC, but when I got involved in it, they took me to Montreal to talk about it.
Wow.
And I found out that I think 71, I think, when the other started having hockey tournaments across Canada. So it's got to be the first one in Canada, the first native hockey tournament.
Imagine, little Salmon Arm, we have a claim to fame there.
Well, it'll be the first one in North America.
Yeah.
Because you look down south, they got no rinks. You have to go way down, no, not even down South America.
Yeah, the outdoor rinks is a phenomenon that kind of...
Yeah, so it's got to be the first one in North America, you know, when you think about it. They found out, though, they had inter-school, you know, residential playing, and but as to an official hockey tournament, they guessed that, because you got, I think, more research needed to be done into it. But so far, I know it was the first one in BC. So
how long did that go on for? Like, how many years did the Eagles exist?
I can't remember, because I didn't play too much. I wasn't, I played a few times.
What was your position?
I was a winger, and once we went to Penticton, we played them, and our goalies weren't there, so they put me in goal.
How did that go?
Yeah, we won.
Great.
Yeah, but, you know, it was a fun time. I played for Sioux Shop Woodticks. Joey Manuel had a team, so I wasn't good enough for our local team here, so I went and played for Chase.
Oh, but I love the name Woodticks.
Yeah.
It's a great team name.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, just the idea of getting together with a bunch of us people together, Native people together, and playing hockey. And
so what was the Chase team's name?
Well, I went to play a tournament in Merritt with them. That's the only time I played for them, because they didn't have an arena until here just a few years ago. They finally got an arena over there. So they didn't really have a place. I think they mostly played out in the lake there down by the bridge, by the wharf. Because that's where I remember the Eagles went to play with them. Anyway, so it was that. Sports was always been, I liked sports.
Yeah.
I even had a ball team my own.
Yeah?
Yeah. We joined the commercial league here in town. I think it was five teams to begin with, fast pitch. And five teams, and then that's where I got to know a lot of the other guys, Mike Bailey and a bunch of others. We played the RCMP, we played a few other teams, and it was fun. They came out to play at our park there, too. We called it Mosquito Park. Thousands of mosquitoes out there. Pete Purdeby was the one that was an iconic with a ball. Any kind of ball, he was always there. He was our ref all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we were called the Salmon Arm Sasquatches back then. Oh, a big Sasquatch. I think none of us were over 140 pounds. But, you know, we had a lot of fun. Well, of course, we were still drinking back in the day. It was still fun, team building, you know, and all of that. And I actually got our people involved in bowling. You know, we're sitting around drinking at home, you know, and tired of same old, I told them, let's go try something different. So I looked around, and of course the bowling alley looked like fun and is still drinking, and we entered a league up there. And we ended up forming a native bowling tournament up there too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, but you know, it was a way of socializing, you know, getting off the reserve too, you know, and a lot of our people bowl up there now, still going on, and the drinking is not as much anymore, so it's more of a fun thing now. And Jerry brought a little bit of fame to that, too. He's the one, a perfect bowler.
Yeah, I know. He's a famous bowler in the community.
Yeah.
Your brother, Jerry. Yeah. I hear stories from other people when I say, you know, if Jerry's was going to do a project with us, I'd say, yeah, Jerry Thomas. And like, oh, the bowler.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, it's... I don't know, I guess kind of leadership's always been my role, you know, and hockey, baseball, softball. Well, actually, I played baseball, too. Eddie Jim had equipment and everything, and he sponsored us. Sky Blue Water sponsored us, so we went out and played baseball, too. A few exhibition games all over and fun thing to do, but sports has always been... a lot of fun, but I don't know, everything seems to be cyclical. Nobody's interested in anymore. It's always other priorities take over now, and maybe one day it'll come back again.
Well, it's like that, I think, all across over. The culture, right? Like,
yeah.
We're very connected to our digital devices, and people are struggling to kind of keep fit. They're doing a lot of sitting down.
Well, that's what happened with our ball team. We ended up with about 11 teams after all. Then slow pitch came in, co-ed ball, and so fast pitch kind of died out because that became more popular then, so fast pitch kind of disappeared. Everybody liked the women playing too, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's
well, it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, everybody got together, and the ball isn't whizzing by you now, it's arcing over by you.
Tell me about the projects that you do outside of Salmon Arm area, like at Revelstoke. What have you been doing up there?
Well, I've been mostly up there talking, you know, about our culture, get them to understand a little more about who we are as Swakopmund people. And I have been to Banff, too. I talked with them. And it's one guy up there owns a hotel, and he wants to build a pit house on his property, by his hotel. And I think it's an overnight guest room. And he got me involved with that. That one up there, because there is some pit houses up there, and they built a golf course right over top of part of a site.
Yeah, of course they did.
Apparently some prince or some royalty would like golf, so they built that golf course for him, and they buried three, four pit houses up there. There's only a couple left, and it's off to the side. So it's recognition of our people why they were up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have an agreement with the Stoney that we can hunt on their land, and that's why we're up there.
The Stoney's territory comes up from, like, the Alberta side?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It comes right up to the Banff there. So that's why I got involved with them up there. There was some big pit houses, and there was... I think they found some smaller ones, 10 footers. You know, people were asking, how come they were so small? And I said, well, you got to remember those were temporary. You know, they went up there and hunting party. So they brought very little women with them. And so the main camp was probably in Invermere, up in that area. So they didn't need a great big pit house. And apparently there was about 10 of them on the foothills of Calgary. They were there for the longest time, and archaeologists finally went out there and had a look at them, and they found out there were pit houses. Our people did travel over there to hunt buffalo, I guess. Mm. And so that's the reason why I kind of got involved in the Alberta portion of it. And the one that's doing the research on the Glenelg Eagles Hockey Club comes from Lethbridge University, so... Mm. So it kind of spreads out. I've been everywhere, man.
Okay, yeah. Now, what's in the future for Louis? What kind of projects are you wanting to pursue now?
I don't know. Some days I get tired of doing what I'm doing. You know, it feels like I'm spinning my wheels and something hasn't really bit into me, or is it kind of too late for me? Maybe when you get older, maybe you don't have as much energy. Because I remember when my mother was about my age, and I could tell that she was getting tired, you know, because she'd only do about 2-3 hours a day, and then she'd get real tired. So I'd take her for a ride. We'd go up the WAP and spend the day up there just talking and laughing and remembering the good old days, you know, when we were younger. And you know, just a day out. And when I'd bring her home, of course, I took her through Lumbee, and then we'd hit the bingo hall in Vernon, and I'd bring her home, and she'd say, Louis, you just made my day.
Aww.
And so I think maybe I'm getting up there, too. Yeah, my energy level seems to be as high anymore. I'm just thinking about that now. What is my future? I know I promised my kids 30 years, but I'll be over 100 then. And what will I be doing then?
Yeah, well, still chopping wood for people.
Yeah, well, I just finished a couple of cords for my house. But I think it's the exercise that I like doing, you know, keeping fit. Because I see too many guys waste away and, you know, sitting in front of the TV or walking the dog and riding around in their lawnmower. I still like pushing the lawnmower around, you know, to keep fit. And but you know, I think I've been reasonably healthy. I hardly ever see a doctor, and so my health wise, I think I'm okay.
When do you think you'll ever become an elder?
I don't know. I don't really like being called an elder, because I think an elder is the one who can really talk to people and give good advice. Because I find that there's so much gaps in our culture, and I'm still searching, trying to understand why things happen the way they do. Because you look at it now, our ways are disappearing. All our salmon are gone, all our game is gone, all our plants are disappearing, all our trees are gone, you know, all our water is disappearing. So in saying that, is our culture disappearing too? Because there are so many gaps I wished I knew about, because people keep asking me about certain things and I don't know it. So I think that to be called an elder now is like, you know, I don't feel I earn it. And I think that to me, I always say I'm an elder in training.
I feel like you've earned it, Louis. You have spent decades really working to build all of these relationships and to help the settlers of Salmon Arm learn so much more about Sahuapmec culture. I respect that that's a view that you have, but I think, like, you are knowledgeable, you are experienced, you do have cultural knowledge, and you share it so willingly and generously that makes it feel like you're an elder.
I think sometimes the elder, too, that label, you know, it ages you. Mm. That's what I'm scared of. Getting old. I think we all do.
Yeah. Well, Louis, this has been another wonderful episode where I get to learn not only all the projects that you've done in the past, but just kind of your connections and the people that you've met along the way. That's been an amazing thing to witness, that all of these people who have been impacted by you and your knowledge. And I hope the future has many, many more projects because you're really good at this.
Yeah, well, I think I'm an idea man. You know, I got ideas, but I need people around to further it, you know. I think when it comes to the physical part now, I don't think I'll have the strength.
Well, I mean, you're only one guy. Like, yeah. We all need a team of people. And there's always been kind of people that have come at the right time to help you sort of manifest these projects. And I think people are just feeling very privileged to be able to work with you. Yeah. So I hope that happens again and again.
I only do it because, you know, recognition of our people and create that friendship along the way. That's what I'm all about, I think.
Cook's Jam, Louis.
Yeah, Skochatwa, I'm going now.
How do you say see you later again? I thought it was Malwiktama.
Yeah, Malwiktama. Malwiktama.
Malwiktama.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Malwiktama, Louis.
I'll say, hey, Skochatwa. Yeah, I'm going now. It's easier to say.